8b, in other words, Memches Beis, and continuing with the discussion of what is known as Sufim. Okay? All right. So, Levi's interpretation then connects it with two loaves of bread that are so huge and delicious and so on, and says, apparently the idea being that if you remember, there is a medrash which speaks about what happened when Rivka came and she took over the tent that was Sarah's. You know, this was after the death of Sarah, and then, you know, Yitzhak went, and he finally, he got himself a bride now in Rivka, right? And it's written, you know, that he brought her into the tent of his mother Sarah, right? And afterwards he fell in love with her. Okay, it's a funny use. Okay, God's fine. Well, it was a shidduch after all. Sages say in reference to this particular situation, this pasuk, they say that every week, every Shabbos, that Sarah, not only lit the Shabbos nicht, right, but also that the challah that she baked for Shabbos, there was bracha in it. In other words, it was blessed. And then they say that when Rivka came, so the same thing happened again. You know, when she lit the Shabbos licht, so you know the whole tent, of course, radiated with light. And again, when she baked the challah, so there was bracha in it. So obviously, the idea that if you have successful loaves of bread that are very good, and particularly for Jewish occasions and so on, so that therefore there's bracha in the challah itself. So this is what I think may be the situation over here. And unfortunately, one of the tragedies that happened when the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed was that this special quality of bracha was now missing from the challah. So this, according to Levi, he identifies with Nofes Sufi. Yeah, well, then I already, because it also says that there was anon kashur, in other words, there was like the divine cloud over it and so on. That's correct, yeah. So that also returned, yeah. Okay, and now the third opinion. Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi Omar, he says, Zed Devash, it's honey, habo benat tzipia, okay, that comes from tzipia. So the question is, what is tzipia? So the note on the side says min hatsufim. Okay, so the question is, what does min hatsufim mean? So according to those, apparently the word occurs in I'll tell you where it occurs. It occurs actually Nikras Hatsuf. Bein Shalom tells Moshe Rabbeinu, right, that I want to conceal you, but Nikras Hatsuf, in a cleft in the rock, okay? So that the word Suf apparently means a rock in this situation, okay? So that therefore what he's saying is that this is honey that comes from the high rocks. And he says, my mashma, what does it all mean? So he says, you've been talking Rav Sheshes. He says, as Rav Sheshes explained, he says, Kamod Natsun Divriyatsa Vishaitam Barumi Amo. It's as if the Divriyiso, Divriyiso, however you have to pronounce it, I mean, this is the Aramaic equivalent of the word Devorim. You know, Devora, Devorim. The bees go spreading out. The shaitan, and they float literally Rume Omo in the highest reaches of the world, right? Umasyon Duvsho Me Isbe Tura, and they bring honey from the grasses that grow on the high mountains. In other words, a very special type of pure honey that is created. So this is an Ophis Sufim. In other words, the honey that, according to Rabbi Shimon ben Levi, the honey that comes from the highest mountains. Tanan Hasan. So inasmuch as we're talking about honey, so now we talk about another din. This is a din that we have in connection with the whole business of Tuma and Tara. You know, yeah, we have all kinds of dinim, all kinds of halachas that deal with things in the state of Tara, right? Being in the state of purity, and how things can become tummy through touch, through being exposed in an area, let's say, where there's a dead body or a sheretz, you know, a creeping creature, and things like that. You know, there are a million different things that happen. Or if a person that has, you know, let's say a flow, he's a zov or a zova, you know, they have a gonorrhea flow, and so on. All these things, you know, cause tumor, right? So the question is that what if you have, let's say, two different vessels, okay? One vessel is tahor, and then another vessel is tomei. And you pour a liquid from the tahor into the tomei. Okay? This is the question. So the Gemara says over here, okay. Yeah, Tanan Hasan, we learned the following. It says, happens to be in Machshirin, which is one of the tractates in the Taras, you know, the last section of the Mishnah. Okay? It says, Kol ha-notzok tahor, anything which is poured, of course, we're talking about liquids, which is poured from a kli, from a vessel which is tahor, it remains tahor, it remains, that is, the kli remains tahor, chutz, except what? Midvash zifim, the hatzapichim. Okay. Except for the honey of zifim. What is that? We'll discuss in a second. And tzapichim. Tzapichim is probably the plural of where we learn the connection with the man. What did it taste like? It tasted like a tzapichis bidvash. In other words, like a wafer made with honey. Okay? So, these happen to be very thick liquids. Okay? The wafer itself, after all. The wafer, I assume it was, in those days, it wasn't, you know, a biscuit, but it was... you know, it was made out of, after all, the manna, what did it look like? It wasn't baked at the moment, okay? But the taste was, you know, you could take it afterwards and cook it and bake it. I mean, you could do it because it's one of the sense of connection. Erev Shabbos, you have to do it in preparation for Shabbos. We learned a great deal of the laws of, you know, Shabbos and preparations for Shabbos from the Parshas Haman. So, at any rate, these are considered so thick that if you pour, then automatically it makes the kela, you know, which was tahor, that you were pouring from, it like creates a connection between the tomei and the tahor, and therefore what happens? As a result, the kela, which was tahor, now becomes tomei. Okay, so this devash zifim, the question is, what kind of a devash is this? Because obviously it's not nofis zufim. It's quite a contrast, okay, which is very pure honey, and this is, we'll see, sort of an adulterated honey. Okay, so that's what they want to know, my zifim. So the different ideas as to what is the meaning of word zifim. So Omar Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Yochanan says, the vash shemezayefin bo. The zayef in Hebrew means to counterfeit, to make, dross or impure or something like that. But I mean, today they use it, you know, for counterfeit. Okay. In other words, this is not pure. pure honey, but this is honey to which they add other things, cane sugar, things like that, and you know, they adulterate it. So as a result, it becomes thicker, also less expensive. You know, it sounds like things in the supermarket right now. And therefore, this already is an inferior type of honey, and it would be susceptible then to creating, you know, the kelim, which was tor, and making it tummy. Okay, so that's one interpretation of what do they mean by the bar zifim. Okay, Reish Lakish Omar. Reish Lakish says, no, it's not that, he says, but it's al shem mekomo. Says, this is a certain type of varsh that comes from a place called Zif. Kedichsiv, as we find the Pasuk, and this we find in Yehoshua, where he lists, you know, different places that were conquered and settled by the Jewish tribes, right? So one of them he mentions is Zif, the Telem of Olus. Okay? These are all different places in the same general area. It says, Chayotze Badover, likewise, in accordance with this, Ato Omer, we have a Pasuk in Tehillim, which begins, it says, you know, Bevo HaZifim, Vayom Elishoel, Halo David Mistate Rimono. I mean, that's the rest of the Pasuk, can say. That the Zifim came, they said to Saul, you know, King Saul, they said, you know what? David is hiding in our midst. And of course, they wanted to, as a result, what? To sort of betray David's whereabouts. Okay, so therefore obviously the Zifim has not such good connotation as we can see. My Zifim, another interpretation of Zifim, Omer Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan says, B'nei Odom HaMizayfim Divrayim. This refers not to honey itself, which is adulterated, counterfeited, but it refers to people who they lie with the words, and then, you know, they literally counterfeit with the words, but it means actually that they lie and they adulterate everything that they come in contact with. The Rabbi Elazar Omer, the Rabbi Elazar says, Hashem Mekomon, again, he insists, you know, that the word Zifim simply implies that this is a certain type of Devash that comes from its locality, Kinesiv, as the Pasuk says, and again he quotes the same pasuk as mentioned before, Zif the Telem of Olos. Okay. Now the Mishnah also said that with the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, Posku Anshei Amona, which means people of faith came, they ceased. Now of course we know that there are plenty of people of faith even in our own day, but apparently these were people with very special faith that came to an end with the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. So Omar Rabbi Yitzchak, Rabbi Yitzchak said, who are these Anshei Amona? He says, Elu B'nei Odom, they are human beings, Shehein Ma'aminim V'Akadosh Baruch Hu, who have absolute belief in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Tanya, as we have learned, Rabbi Eliezer HaGadol Omer, Rabbi Eliezer, of course it's Rabbi Eliezer ben Hurkanes, they very often refer to him as Eliezer HaGadol, right? He said, call me Sheyesh Lo Pas Pesalo, whoever has simply a crust of bread in his basket, that's all that he has, the Omer, and he says, Ma Uchal Mahor, what will I eat tomorrow? In other words, if I eat up my bread today, what will I have for tomorrow? So he says, Einu Ela Miktani Amona, he is of those who have very little faith. In other words, if you had great faith, you would say, I know that the Rebbeinu Shalom will help me tomorrow and will help me provide again. Okay. V'haydin Omer Rabbi Elazar, and there, this is in accordance with what Rabbi Elazar said, my dechsev, what is the meaning of the Pasuk, Kimi Baz Leyom Kitanos, who is it who despises the day of small things? Pasuk in Zechariah. In other words, people are always looking for something big, and they despise anything that isn't big. You know, bigness becomes the quality that they look for. So Zechariah says, don't look for the day of big things to happen. Every day is important, even if it's a day of small things, okay? Migoram the Tzadikim, who brought about the fact that the righteous, Sheyiz Basbazu Shulchonon Osid Lovey, the twist that he gives is that the Tzadikim are going to, like, debase their table in the world to come. Says Ketanus Shehoya Behem Shelohem Inu Bakorish Baruch Hu. It was the pettiness that they had, the Ketanus, right? That they didn't believe in the HaKadosh Baruch Hu. What table are they talking about over here? Well, I don't know if you remember when we learned Tainus, we had a story about Rabbi Chanina Mendoza that told all kinds of wonderful things about him and his wife, his family, and so on. And one of the things, you know, Rabbi Chanina Mendoza was an extremely pious individual, and the Rabbeinu Shalom says that the world itself exists because of Rabbi Chanina Mendoza. In other words, because of his piety, that in his merit the world exists. And yet he is content with what? With a kav haruvim. It's like, let's say, a peck or a bushel of carob fruit from Erev Shabbos to Erev Shabbos. That's all that he had to eat the entire week, okay? So he was a very poor person. So Gemara and Titus, we read one of the stories about Chanin Mendoza, that one time his wife said to him, look, why don't you pray that we have, you know, more panosa? So he prayed, and all of a sudden, if you remember, a golden leg fell down from heaven. Now naturally, with the golden leg, they could sell it and make a fortune, and they wouldn't have to worry about panosa, right?
Right.
But Chanina and Nosa wanted to know, what was this golden leg that fell down? So Rebbeinu Shalom explained to him that this was the leg of the table that was prepared for him and his wife in the Olam Haba. And therefore, if this is what he wants, then, you know, it means that his table in the Olam Haba would be diminished thereby and become a little bit less steady, right? Less sturdy. So he immediately threw the leg up, and the hand came from heaven and seized it and took it back again, because he said he wants to have, you know, he would rather suffer in this world than have the shulchan in the Olam Haba. So this is what they're talking about. In other words, the tzaddikim, they deserve a shulchan in the Olam Haba, right? But they cheapen it, they abase it or debase it or whatever you want to say, okay, by the smallness of their faith in this world, okay? Rava Omar, Rava gave a different interpretation. He says, Eloi says, Kenhane b'nei Risha Yisrael. He says, these are the small children born to the Risha Yisrael, to the Rishoyim, in other words, wicked people who are Jewish, right? Wicked people who are Jewish. And as Rashi explains, these are children who die at a very young age, okay? Shemavazbazin din avihem la'osid lovei, who caused the din, in other words, the judgment given to their fathers, right, in the world to come, to become a little bit, what shall we say, I wouldn't say debased, the cheapened, it's hard to find, you know, the word exactly, but it's really, it's like saying that the judgment becomes not so severe, not, you know, it becomes diminished, right? Omer Lufano, these children say to the Rebbeinu Shalom, right? Me'achar sha'ata asir lipara mehen, right? Since you are going in the future to punish them for the wickedness that they commit in this world, so loma hikhesem shinehem bob, so why, Rebbeinu Shalom, did you literally cause the teeth to be set with pain? In other words, why did you give them the pain of, you know, having us die? because as a result they feel sorry, right? They had sorrow in this world. In other words, instead of living a life of Riley, they also knew what it meant to suffer in this world. And therefore, that being the case, it means that these children, therefore, plead with the Rebbeinu Shalom, not because of the fact that their parents did suffer in this world, even though they were Shoyim, that therefore their din in the world to come should therefore be alleviated by the suffering that they had in this world. So it says they are pleading on behalf of their parents that the Rebbeinu Shalom should give them a much easier sentence than Olam Haba. Okay? Well, there are a few more lines over here, and then we'll call them a night. Okay?
Yeah.
Omar Rabbi Eli Bar Yevrechyo, he says, Yilmolet Filose Shel David, if it warrants for the fact that King David prayed on behalf of the people of Israel, are you called Yisrael Mokri Vavoth? Then all the people of Israel would be Bokri Rabot. What are Bokri Rabot? Rabot normally means a stain. Okay? They would be selling stained garments. In other words, shmatas. Jews would become shmata sellers. And I don't mean shmata in the sense that it's used in the garment district, where they refer to high style dresses too as being shmatas. What business are you in? The shmatas business, right? But this means literally shmatas over here. In other words, King David prayed on behalf of the Jews that they shouldn't all be condemned to a life of tremendous poverty. Okay?
Rags,
okay, exactly. Shenemar, as the Pasuk says, and this is, of course, the Pasuk continues, says, She saw the Shem, where all the Rebbeinu Shalom, give them Mora. But notice that the word Mora is spelt with a hey at the end and not with an olive. If it were with an olive, then it's a different word. It means fear, right? But here, Mora means it's like related to the word, as Rashi explains. He says it's related to the word Morus. You know what Morus means? Morus means like authority. In other words, that the Goyim, this is how Rashi explains it. He says that the Goyim should have respect for the Jews because the Jews are not condemned only to live a life selling rags, that's all. So, as a result of the prayer of King David, so therefore the Jewish people were able to make a better living. Doesn't mean every Jew, but certainly some Jews were able to make a better living, and the Goyim would have respect more for them. Another interpretation that he gives, very often, in the Gemaras we discovered that if they have one statement by a certain authority, so they'll quote two or three others as well. Because since all this had to be memorized, if you remember, it wasn't written down to begin with, it was all memorized. So one of the ways in which you could remember is by associating several different statements with the same author. Okay? And if it weren't for the prayer that Habakkuk, one of our prophets made, then Hoyu based on Miri Chachomim Niskasim and Tal Sachas, the Oskim Batorah, then you would find that two Talmidei Chachomim would have to be clothed in one garment because they're too poor in order to be able to afford separate clothes for themselves, separate garments for themselves. And study Torah. Shenemar, as the Pasuk says, the Habakkuk Ad Hashem, Shomati Shimacho, Yoresi, I heard your voice, right? I trembled. Ad Hashem, Bolchob, the Kerem Shalim Chayehu, bring about life while we're still alive, right? He says, Al Tikro, the Kerem Shalim, but Elo, the Korov Shnayim. But read rather as when two people learn together Torah. In other words, give them life, enable them to have something better than simply one garment to share between the two. Another statement, Moravi Eloi Bar Yivero. Here he says, Shnei Talmidei Chachomim, Hamahalchim Baderach,
if there are two Talmidei Chachamim who are walking on the way, v'yein beinehem divrei Torah, but they're not discussing Torah, instead what are they doing? They're talking about stock market, all scores, etc., etc., right? Then re'uyim l'soreh, then they deserve that they should be burned. But eish, and of course by heavenly fire, it means, okay? Shene'emar, Pasuk, here this comes from the story about, if you remember, Elijah goes up to heaven, right? Vayehi heima holkim holoch v'daber, right? That Elijah and Elisha were walking and talking. Obviously, they had to be talking the Brit Torah, right? Inei rechav eish, and behold, a chariot of fire, and so on, and because of them, it took, if you remember, Eliyahu up to heaven, okay? So the point is that the rechav eish, the fire of heaven, came down because what were the two doing? They were talking, obviously, the Brit Torah. Talmud ikot tibor, right? The reason is for the heavenly fire is because there was talk of Torah between them. But if there was no talk of Torah between them, then this heavenly fire could have burnt them out. Okay? And the last statement that they have over here, Rabbi Eloi Bar Yerachya, says, Rabbi Eloi Bar Yerachya, Shnei Talmidei Chachamim, if you have two Torah scholars, Hadorin Be'ir Achas, and they live in the same city, V'yein Nochen Zelezek, the halacha, and they're not nice to each other. In other words, each one hates the other one. They're always feuding and everything else. You know, so echad beis v'echad goyle. Then one of them is bound to die, and another one is bound to go into golus. Shenemar. It's written in connection, if you remember, with the rotzeach. This is what we studied, of course, when we learned the Gemara Makos, right? It's written over there, Lanus Shama Rotseyach Asher Yitzach Esvayehu B'Flidas, that the city of refuge was created so that the murderer can flee over there who slays his fellow men without any knowledge. In other words, he didn't do it deliberately, right? B'Flidas. But what is B'Flidas? V'yein Das in the Torah. And Das means Torah. Shenemar Nidmu ami bibli hadas. My nation, my people perish without knowledge, says Hosea, right? So that therefore we see that where there is knowledge of Torah and people are nice to each other, then in that case, it's an ideal situation. But if not, then it's not a very ideal situation. And it doesn't bring any respect to Torah when Talmidei Chachamim are continually fighting with each other and a nasty one to another. All right, I'll close with one more statement over here. Yeah, Omar Rabbi Yehuda, Bereid Rabbi Chiyah, Rabbi Yehuda, the son of Rabbi Chiyah, said, called Talmid Chacham, Ha'osek Batorah, V'Torchat Chak, that any Talmid Chacham who is learning Torah and he's in economic difficulties, nevertheless, tefillas nishmas, his prayer will be heard by the Rabbeinu Shalom, Shenemar, Kiyam b'Tzion Yeshev, because a nation lives in Tzion, Yerushalayim, Kiyam b'Tzion Yeshev Yerushalayim, right? The people of Zion live in Jerusalem, v'chol osef keh, do not weep anymore. Chanon yochdecho lekol zachmecho kishamato ono, because the Rabbeinu Shalom will show grace unto you when you cry unto him, when he hears you and he will answer you. Usiv basrei, and right after it is written, Inosan Hashem lachem lechem sar mayim b'achat, the Rabbeinu Shalom will give you bread even if not in great quantity, and water even if not in great quantity, and Rabbi Bo Omer must be in Osa Meziv Shechina, because Rabbi Bo says the reason being that even if the food is rather small in quantity, but nevertheless, the Rabbeinu Shalom will give them the radiance of the Shechina. Shenemar, V'hoyu Einecha Rosh Hashmorecha, as the Pasuk says, and your eyes will behold your teacher, meaning the Rebbeinu Shalom, who is our teacher of Torah, right? Rav Acha Bar Chanina Omar, af in hapargo nino b'fula. He said, likewise, the heavenly partition will never be closed before them. Shenemar, as it is written, v'lo yekonef od morecha, which means, and your teacher will never again be concealed from you. So that if we continue to study Torah, then Rebbeinu Shalom will help us that even if we're not the richest people in the world, right? But nevertheless, we should continue to study Torah for its own sake and enjoy the Ziv Hashchino, the light of the divine presence on me. Okay.
When did you leave off?
Okay.
Oh, where are
you? Yeah. Yeah, we're in the middle of the Daf Memtes Amid Aleph, okay? And starts with two little dots over there, right? Today is April 28th already.
Yeah, 1999.
Where does time go to? Okay, and it is 1999, and we are on Memtes Amid Aleph, which is part of the final Daf in Masechet Sota. All right. The Mishnah says, he said, from the day that the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, he says, there isn't a day without any klola. In other words, there's no day which is not cursed. There are all kinds of terrible things happen because the Beis HaMikdash has been destroyed. And as a matter of fact, as the Gemara is now going to tell us, one day seems even worse than the next. Okay, so this is what Rava's comment is right now. Omar Rava, Rava said, "V'chol yom v'yom, every single day, merubo kilaloso mishel chaveiro. The klala of that particular day is worse even than that of its predecessor." In other words, since the destruction of the temple, we keep on going from bad to worse, and worse to even more worser. Okay? If I could create a word.
Worser.
Okay. Shenemar, as the Pasuk says, and of course this is part of the Tochecha that we find in the Devarim. It's written over there, Baboker Tomar Yitein Erev, in the morning you will say, would that the evening would come, or the Erev Tomar, and in the evening, you will say, Miyitein Boker, would that we had morning. But as we'll see in a moment, it says, Hi Boker, what do we mean by Boker? The morning. It says, Ilemo Boker de la Mochor, are we talking about the following morning? Miyeda, my Habe. How do you know what's going to be? It could be much worse than that. So that's not something to say, you know, would that we had Boker. When it comes to evening, but instead we have to interpret as the evening, that as the morning which already had preceded, the morning which had already passed. In other words, you know what sorrows you had then, but you don't know what sorrows you may have the following day. That looks, you know, not so terrible in comparison to what the tomorrow may bring. So since things are going so bad,
very pessimistic.
It is. It is.
Historically.
Well, that's because you weren't. You know, you missed the whole thing. Is the last few pages have been dealing primarily with the concept that since one disaster after another has befallen the people of Israel, and one generation after another seems to be worse and worse and worse. So that therefore we'll wind up, and what's going to happen to us? So here is one question now that's going to be asked right now. Okay, so the Gemara wants to know, V'yela alma mai kovakayim, since things are getting worse and worse every single day. So how can the world exist? How can it withstand? You know. So the answer is, and this is a very interesting answer that they give. They say akedusha de sidra. The Ayahesh Me Rabada Gadata. Okay? What is the Kedusha, the Sidra? This is what we say when we say Yuvolatzion Goel. And as you know, a very important part of the prayer of Yuvolatzion Goel is the fact that we say Kodosh, 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 Harashem Tzos Malachot Kevodo. Right, right. So this was said when they would finish a Sidra, Sidra in the sense of here, not, you know, Parshas HaShavua, but a learning session. So at the end of a learning session, it was proper to recite Kadosh, 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 Hashem says, Melechotz Kavodo. Okay? So that became established as part of a siddur that every single day we say it. Either we say it in the morning, or on Shabbos and the major Yom Tovim, we say it in the afternoon. Okay?
And even though.
The only time that we do that, you're right, is Motzoi Shabbos. But you know the right, and then of course I don't know if you remember, but at the very beginning, first of all we speak about that the Geula will come, right? The world is here in Goel, and to whom will come? The Shavifer Shabayakev. In other words, to those people among the Jewish people who do tshuva. They will cease sinning and they'll do that which is right, right? And then we bring in a posuk, you know, from Yeshayahu, which says, Vanizos Brisiyasam Hashem Ruchesh, and so on and so forth, that God makes the following declaration to us. He says, the covenant which I give unto you will be a covenant what will be to you, to your children, and to your grandchildren, right? Me'atav Yadelam, forever and ever and ever. In other words, you can be assured that God's covenant will remain together with us forever and ever throughout the generations. But of course, how do we maintain this? It's by reciting the Kedusha of Hashem and studying Torah, you see. So this is what keeps the world from going completely bankrupt, okay? And what is the other thing? It's Yehei Shmei Rabbah, the Agarata. Now, why they say the Agarato? Because originally, apparently, Kaddish was recited
after
there would be a session in Agoda. Okay, in other words, they would say words of Nechama and so on, you know, another Medrash and things like that and so on. And then they would recite the Kaddish and say Yehei Shmei Rabbah. And of course, we learned in the Gemara Brochas that if you say Yehei Shmei Rabbah with all your heart and all your soul, it can tear up any evil decree that is issued against us. So that's why it's so important to listen and to respond. Both Kedusha and Yehei Shmei Rabbah. Very important. Okay? Shenemar, and he bases it upon a Pasuk. Pasuk says, Eretz ofso kimo ofel, salmovis velo sidorim. That the world is thick with darkness, and it's filled with a shadow of death, and there is no sidorim. In other words, because there's no seder in the world. You know, the world, there's no rhyme or reason or justice that is taking place in this world. But, you know, again, what did we say before? Kedusha the Sidra. So, in other words, we're now interpreting the word sidorim in the sense where there is no study of Torah. This is what brings the world, you know, about the darkness in the world. But Ho Yesh Sidorim, but where we do have the study of Torah taking place, then in that case, Tofia Mi Ofel, darkness will shine from, light will shine from the darkness. Okay. Then we learned also in the Mishnah that, you know, since the time the Beis HaMikdosh was destroyed and so on, so it says, V'lo Yorayad Talib Rocha, that there will never be any dew descending as a blessing. V'nital Tam Peros, and the delicious taste of the fruit will be taken away. It's like our hothouse tomatoes and stuff like that, you know, the kind of fruit that we buy these days. They look pretty on the outside, but they don't have any tam on the inside, okay? How different, for example, if you go to Eretz Yisrael and you have a piece of fresh fruit and it's time. Oh, this is geschmack. That really has a real tam.
Yeah, if you find it here, it's not good too, but you can find it here.
Right.
Right,
true. And you can pay fancy prices for fruit and still you're not getting very much.
In the summer, you get some pretty good fruit.
Think in terms, for example, of strawberries. Sometimes we hit a strawberry that has a tom, and other times it's straw.
In the same box.
Right, the same box.
Next to each other.
Yeah.
Add two strawberries from the same box. The first one, no
tom
at all.
Right. So, Tanya, we had a verse which says, Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar says, Tahara batla, Tam Vareach, Maser Bitel Shuman Dogon. All right, which means when people cease to observe rules of Tara, in other words, of the, you know, cleanliness, of purity, this is really the word I'm looking for, and, you know, butla, then that became abandoned by people, then in that case, tam v'reach. So in that case, or maybe we should read it as tahara bitla tam v'reach. In other words, make it into an active verb, which means that the failure to observe the laws of purity caused the taste and the fragrance of fruit, you know, to be lost. Okay? Meiser bitel shuman. When people cease to observe the rules concerning tithing of foods, so in that case, what happened? Then what happened is that the shuman dogan, in other words, the nourishing part of the grain that we use,
the fatness of the corn.
You know, the fatness of the corn. But you have to realize, when the English translation over here uses the word corn, that's because it was done in England.
Oh, I see.
Corn in England is grain. It's not what we call corn in America. What we call corn in America,
it's
in other countries, is called maize,
yeah,
or whatever you want.
It used to be called maize.
Right, right. Okay? So what he means is that, you know, the fatness of the grain, in other words, the nourishment that you get, the full nourishment you get out of the grain that you make into the breads and the cakes,
isn't
and so
general,
that you eat, instead of corn.
When you refer to corn,
right,
that it's corn bread,
yeah,
doesn't it refer to grain and not this, what we call it?
You're probably
corn?
Right, yeah. Unless they use cornmeal in it, I don't know.
I don't think so.
Cornmeal is cornmeal.
Yeah, there is cornmeal.
There is cornmeal,
right,
but usually,
yeah,
when you buy corn bread, it's made from a from grain.
By the way,
cornmeal.
Yeah. Does anybody need loads and loads and loads of matzo ball? Food Bot is willing to give it away free.
Free, yeah.
Yeah.
You've got to make a lot of matzo ball.
What do you do with it?
Make a lot of
latkes. I suppose you make latkes, but you try cases.
I can't even do away with my pizza
box. All right.
It's big enough, that's why.
I guess they overwrought it, you know, how much they need.
They know that.
Yeah, the other day, they
you
gave...
Why don't you check this, some of the Jewish agencies
that
get their home and a few places like that?
Yeah, that's an idea. Yeah, maybe
you go in and ask for a box and they'll give it to you?
They'd be happy to. But really, they'd like to unload the whole group of it, right?
Called some of the homes in the children's homes in New York and Boston area.
Uh-huh. No, it's an idea. Okay, I'll mention this to the manager tomorrow.
Okay.
Rav Huna Ashkach Tumarto Dechininusa. Rav Huna found a date, Tumarto, right? Dechininusa. The question is, what is Chininusa? So, one explanation given by Rashi is that Chininusa means it's the name of a place where they grew exceptionally sweet and fat dates. Okay? So Shakla, he took it, Kiracha Besudo, right? And he wrapped it around with his cloak, shawl, whatever you wish. And then also Rabba Bereis, and then along came his son Rabba, Omalei, and he said to him, that is, you know, he said to Rav Huna, to his father, he said, Wachino Recha Dechininusa, I can sense, he says, the fragrance,
yeah, the aroma, right,
that comes from the Chininusa, from this, you know, the special,
right,
type of a date. So Amalei, so Rav Huna said to Rabba, his son, he says, Bini, Tahara Yeshbecha, you possess Tahara, you possess purity. Why? How does he know that his son? Because we said before that the tam was taken away, the tam and the reach, right? But now that he can actually sense it, means that he himself is still so pure in spirit that he has this capacity to sense the sweetness of this particular date. So Yehava Nihale, so he gave it to him. Ad Hochi, in the meantime, also Abba Berei. Long came Abba, the son of Who? Of Rav Barhuda, right? In other words, this is the Einikul of Rav Huda, right? He came along. So, Shakla, he took it. That is, in this case, remember, he gave it to Rabbah, his son, right?
Yeah, right.
So Rabbah took it, and Yahweh Nihale, so he gave it to his son, Abba, right? Or others say that Abba became Rabbah in the Gemara, also famous, okay? At any rate, Omale, so he said to him, Bini, Simachto es libi, vikiso es shinai. He says, you know, you not only made me very, very happy, literally you gladdened my heart, but also at the same time you set my teeth on edge. In other words, you both made me happy and at the same time you made me feel very bad. In what way? He made him happy in that what? That he showed, you know, that he could, that he has appreciation, right? He's talking to Rabbah.
You love your son more than you love me.
Yeah, right. This is what's going to happen. All right. But anyway, he says, Simachta is Libi, you made my heart happy in what way? That you were able to demonstrate through your Tahara that you can sense this luscious piece of fruit. Yeah. But the Kisa is Shina. You set my teeth on edge in what way? In that, you know, you rejected my gift and instead you gave it to your son, as we'll see in a second, that the son didn't show any great gratitude for this gift.
You mean what do you mean he rejected it?
So I'm gonna leave it this way. Okay, so he says, Haina da Amra Yinshi, I'll explain in a second. He says, this is what people say. Whenever you have Haina da Amra Yinshi, it means that this is a popular expression that people like to say. Namely, Rachme da Abba Abani, right? Rachmo da Vani Abani. He says, a father's love is expressed for his own child, okay? But the love of a son, of a child, is expressed for his own children. In other words, it's a fact of life to a certain extent. Okay. You're a grandpa or grandmother. Okay? Good. So naturally, you love your children, right?
And
they love their children. But the relationship normally between a grandchild and a grandparent is not as close as it is between a grandchild and their own particular parents, but the father and mother, right? Yeah, right. Yeah.
Imagine how much attention the son pays to his children.
You're absolutely right.
Nowadays it's different still.
Yeah, right. Well, this is why we're dealing with...
Generally speaking.
Right, generally speaking, that's correct. Okay.
Actually, there's another story, too. If you give somebody a gift...
Right.
That person should never give that gift to somebody else from the first person else.
Right,
The same story behind it.
Right. Because it feels, you know, that...
somebody a gift, that's it. If you give your daughter a gift, that's it. You want her to keep. If she wants her to give it to somebody else, let her give it to somebody whom you don't know, that you don't see somebody else.
But you don't see
That's human nature.
Yeah.
We call that recycling. You have to recycle that.
Well, okay. Whatever. Right. So anyway... Gemara now continues to illustrate this.
Okay.
Says Rab Acha bar Yaakov, it palbe Rab Yaakov bar Barte. Okay, Rab Acha, the son of Yaakov, took care of Rab Yaakov, who happened to be his daughter's son. Okay, in other words, he was
his
a Zeta, and he took care of his grandson. Okay, Kigodal. So when the grandson grew older, so Omalei said to him one day, Ashkayan Maya, bring me a drink of water. Okay. Omalei Labrichana, I'm not your child. In other words, I'm not obligated to bring it to you. I don't have to tell you. Azad Tafshatu.
It shouldn't be his grandfather.
There's no great Bachas to a grandfather or to a grandmother.
I thought that the present time is something unusual. It's starting early.
This is very common today.
There's another shooting in Canada today.
Yeah.
Bottom of Memtaz.
The Haidu, the Amri, and Shay. And this again is what people like to say. It says, Rabbi, Rabbi, here it doesn't mean Rabbi, Rabbi, but it means raise me, in other words, take care of me, take care of me. This is what the grandchild says to who? To the Zeta. But Barbartech Ada, nevertheless, I'm still your daughter's son, in the sense that I don't feel an obligation to you.
But
to my mother, to my father, yes, I have an obligation, but not to you, say to a puppy.
But it really implies the implication with Rami, Rami, that that Zeta has an obligation to
raise. Zeta has an obligation, but
I'm not
required
to honor you like a father.
Right.
Doesn't that mean that even if you were to raise me, you still aren't my father?
No, not that you aren't my father.
Even if you were to the grandfather, even
If you raise me, you're still not my father, and therefore I don't owe you the same amount of covet that I should give to my parent. Right, exactly. Yeah. So that's why he didn't feel obligated to bring the drink of water to his Zeta.
Why
it was necessary? One mother can't bring it? Attention, we can't take care of them.
I think that they bring it in order to show again how the generations have degenerated, okay?
At that time.
Right.
You're supposed to honor the elders.
Right, of course you're supposed to. Yeah. I mean, we read in the Torah this week, you are to show honor to the presence of an elderly person. Never mind, it's your grandfather, obviously.
About the first century,
the second century of the Common Era, right?
Still crying the same tears.
Yes. These are mostly Tanoim. Some of them are also Amoraim. It doesn't make any difference. But the point is, we can see, not everybody's a Tachshit, unfortunately.
Human nature.
Right. Yeah.
Thank God.
Well, listen, nevertheless, God bless us. We have grandchildren. We shut bachas from them. And particularly when we see that they go in the kind of way that we want them to go. And then in that case, there are added benefits in life, right? Okay, now we come into another historical notation. The Mishnah now says, the Pulmas shel Aspasianus Gozul Atros Chasonim the Alho Eros. Okay? Pulmus is the Hebrew version of the Greek word polemos, which means either a war, a battle, or sometimes it's used also for an army as well. Although for that we also have another word in Greek, namely stratiotes. And of course we can see from the word polemos we have the English word polemic. What's a polemic? It's an argument, a fight between you, right? And the word stratiotes, of course, for that we have the word, like strategy and so on, because strategos in Greek would mean somebody who carries, military science into. All right. And of course, the Gemara uses the word too, except that, it looks in the Gemara, that's istrategos and so on, okay. There's a lot of Greek that we find in the language of the Mishnah, as well as in the Midrashim, time to time in the Gemaras too, but particularly in the language of the Mishnah and in the Mishnah, we find a lot of Greek words that became part of the Hebrew language. And it's going to be interesting to see how they look upon the Greek language, because that's on the next side of the page. As we go heading down towards the end, we'll see their attitude towards it. Okay. So, at any rate, in this war of Aspasianus, or in English his name is Vespasian, which happens to be the last days of the second Beis Hamikdash. At that time the Jewish people rebelled against Rome. They wanted to fight for their own freedom, their own independence, and so the emperor in Rome sent Vespasian to Eretz Yisrael that he should head the Roman legions over there and to carry on the fight. And under Vespasian, they conquered most of Eretz Yisrael and surrounded the city of Yerushalayim, which was still holding out against the Jews. We have more of the picture over here in reference to Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai and so on, not over here, but in the Gemara in Gittin, where they speak about, in Perek HaNizokin over there, where they speak about the last days of Jerusalem and the siege and the horrible things that took place at that time. And the role of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai in saving the people of Israel by his contact with Vespasian, who was the Roman general. Okay, so what happened at that time? So he says, Gozrul Atros Chassanim V'Yalho Eros. Okay, they made two decrees. One concerning the wreaths that Chassanim would wear. In other words, when you were married, the groom would wear a wreath, and the kala would also have like a crown. And we'll discuss that. Okay, so that was one of the things that they made a decree about. When the Gemara will take a look and we'll see exactly what was the nature of the decree that they made. The rabbis made a decree.
Why?
Gezerah, because they wanted to show mourning.
Mourning,
right? To indicate mourning, obviously. Yeah. Now the question is, what is the Eros? This is not clear from here, but again, the Gemara indicates that it is a type of a drum. Now, of course, there was a drum. We have to realize there are all kinds of drums. And what they mean by a drum could be anything from like what they call a tabret, you know, a small drum. And we'll see from the Gemara, the description for Eros that they give is one which has only one skin. Instead of being, you know, two skins, right? Upper and bottom, it only has one, and you beat upon it, and maybe another one has bells attached to it or something like that.
So they use
okay?
these at wedding ceremonies.
They use it at the ceremony, right, and they would, you know, bang it as a sign of joy. So in order to indicate the idea of mourning,
the music,
and you know, in the Gemara Brochas, you have the famous story over there about how in the midst of the wedding celebration, everybody was having such a good time that all of a sudden one of the rabbis over there, he took a precious goblet and he smashed it to the ground. And of course this became the basis for what we do under the chuppah, right. You know that the chassan breaks a glass, it's a sign of mourning again for Yerushalayim. Gemara over there says that Yatzivu, that everybody became saddened when they saw this happen and so on. So they said, you know, what hope do we have, you know? So they said, there's one thing that can save us all, and that's the study of Torah. So you see how important Torah is in our life. Mm-hmm. Just as we had over here, that the Torah can bring the Ziv Hashkina to us, the radiance of God's divine presence when we study Torah. So it's also true that life doesn't have to be necessarily only a veil of sadness, but it could also be a joyous occasion, and of course, what is the greatest source of joy? That's the joy that we get when we actually delve into the Torah and study the Word of God, right? Okay, so that was what Gezerah. The Pulno Shel Titus, in the war of Titus, Titus was the son of Vespasian, and he was the one who completed the war against the Jews, and he was the one who captured eventually Yerushalayim after a 3-year siege and burnt the Beis HaMikdash, and then the Romans plowed the territory. They didn't want it to flourish anymore and so on. So they made another gezeira, Gozru Atros Kalos that time. So they made a decree concerning the wreaths that Kalos would wear. Okay? Or literally crowns, Atoras, or crown of wreaths. They also made a gezeira that a person should not teach his son Greek. Okay?
What did they say about the crown?
Yeah, we'll come to it.
What's the reference between
Yvonis? Yeah, I see it over there, but I don't know.
I don't know.
No, there's no nothing on the side to indicate what reference
it
is.
They did not, if Greek was the language of the land, and Hebrew
it's one of the languages,
well, what language would they be speaking? Hebrew was not a spoken language at any point.
Well, it was and it wasn't. Needless to say, there were those who wanted to stress the importance of speaking Hebrew.
And they did at that time.
Right. Other people spoke Aramaic.
Greek was not the language.
Okay. There were people who spoke Greek. Because I have to tell you, Greek not only was important from the point of view of Greece, let's say, but in Asia Minor, this was one of the main languages that was spoken. And even the Romans, who spoke Latin after all, Latin was their language, but nevertheless, an educated Roman had to study Greek as well. And for example, when I, you know, back in the old days, when I was a Latin major, Loyoleno, at times you would come across Greek words as part of Latin. You see. Of course, they also studied a little Greek too. So, but the point is that even in, for example, in Cicero's letters, which are considered, you know, the highest type of Latin. Nevertheless, he throws in a Greek word from time to time. Right.
Wasn't he
was a big anti-Semite.
And the complex in Greek
was a big, he was a lawyer, and he used anti-Semitism in order to free these Gandovim that Rome sent over to rob the Jews. Right.
Weren't some of the stories also written in Greek? Or
pardon me?
Weren't some of the stories also written in Greek?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Of course. Because a lot of people use Greek, so it was a recognized language in you know, the Eastern Mediterranean world. Okay. All right, so at any rate, here is the decree not to study Greek. Well, we'll come to that again, because we'll see that in each one of these things, they need further qualification. The Mishnah only tells us this and this, but then that's why we need a Gemara in order to explain more fully what the Mishnah is referring to. Okay? But Pulmos HaAchron, in the last war, which probably would refer then to the war of Bar Kokhba, when the Jews tried once more, you know, to fight for their freedom, and for 3 years they took on the Roman Empire. Eventually, unfortunately, they lost. So Gozru, they made the following decree, Shelo Teitze HaKala Bar Pirion V'Sochotya, that a kala should not go out literally, in other words, she shouldn't be carried in a pirion. A pirion is like what we would call a litter. I don't have, it has nothing to do with littering streets, but a litter in the sense, you know, that something which is carried on the shoulders of people, right, and it has a seat in it, and usually like a little covering or something like that to protect the bride. And so they would bring the bride in a litter, you know, to the home of the chassan. This is where they were going to live. So they made a decree that the kala should not be carried that way. Well, we'll see again why not, okay? But you can see these are all decrees that emphasize the fact that since the Beis HaMikdash is destroyed, we have to cut down on those things that pertain to Simcha.
It wasn't destroyed
right.
yet. It was about to be destroyed.
No. By the time of the Pulmos HaAchron, it was destroyed.
Titus wasn't destroyed yet.
No.
Vespasian wasn't destroyed yet.
Okay, correct. But by the time of the, what they call the Pulmos HaAchron.
Oh, the final Marduk,
right,
yes.
Right, the temple had already been destroyed, yes.
Is it a question of Simcha, or is it a question of imitation of the mores of
mourning?
No, it's signs of mourning.
The dampens of mourning.
I understand your question. I mean, were other nations doing the same thing?
Because the other nations were doing the things that they want again, you know, to avoid the assimilation.
No, here
the,
it's not.
The
ban against Greek, this we can understand, but again, we'll see that there needs further qualification. We're not finished with it yet, okay? But the other things, these were things that people were doing, and it doesn't fall into the category of what we read in the Torah this past week, where those sales of Bechukis HaGoy do not follow in the customs of the Goy. Okay? Mm-hmm. The idol worship. We had a lot of stuff that we read in the Torah this past week.
Yeah.
We have a lot more stuff coming up now.
Because eventually if you accepted not only idol worship, but not to do as the others do.
Correct. There's the Jewish way of living and the Jewish way of, you know, the ceremonies and so on. But these were all connected with mourning. Matter of fact, I can digress for a moment. There were people after the destruction of Beis HaMikdash who said, there's no point in living anymore. Why are we living? Why should we do anything anymore? You know, how can we ever attain forgiveness of sins, atonement and so on, which the Mizbeach brought to us? And so at that time Rabbi Yehoshua spoke to them and he said, we have to accept the fact, you know, that these things have happened, but we have the words of Torah, we have the words of prayer, and even as the prophet Rabbi Hoshea, who said that with our lips we will literally pay the obligations that we used to previously by sacrificing animals, okay? So that our prayers take the place of that. The tzedakah that we give takes the place of that. All these things that we do, all the mitzvahs that we perform will take the place, you know, the fact that we are now deprived of the Beis HaMikdash, but we cannot simply give up on life. We have to keep on living. That's all there is to it. So it was a horrible period that they went through, and you can appreciate the problems that faced the great rabbis of that time, such as Yochanan ben Zakkai, Rabbi Yeshua, Rabbi Eliezer, and others and so on, you know, to try to keep the spirit of the people up so that they would not simply sink into despair and, you know, give up everything. But at the same time, people felt the pain, the sorrow in their hearts, and so they wanted to express it in certain ways, so that this is what we're dealing with here. Okay? Now, the Mishnah now continues, and it speaks about, again, what losses we suffered with the death of the great and righteous people who had been our rabbis and our teachers. Mishameis Rabbi Meir. But our rabbis gave permission. In other words, there were those who said they made a decree against it, but nevertheless, then along came the rabbis and they eased it, and they said that the kala could still go be carried in this apirion. In the midst of the city. Now, when they speak about the Sofer Yir, they have in mind it's the city of Yerushalayim. But nevertheless, it would apply anywhere as well. Okay? Mishameis Rabbi Meir. When Rabbi Meir died, Botlu Moshe Mishalom. Then those who made all kinds of proverbs ceased. In other words, he was very, very famous for his various proverbs. Probably the most famous proverb. Well, first of all, there's a Gemara that says, you know, that Rabbi Meir made up 300 different fables. He was like the Aesop, right, of the Jewish people. He made up 300 different fables just about foxes alone. Okay? And obviously, he made up fables about other animals as well. Okay?
Did the story survive?
One is very, very famous, and that's the story about the fox in the vineyard.
Yeah.
That the fox found a hole into the vineyard, and then he went into it, and of course he was very famished, he was hungry, so he helped himself to the grapes, and he ate, and he ate, and he ate, and then when he tried to get out, he discovered he couldn't do it. So he had to starve in order to get out again. So he says, so what good did it do me, you see, to do that, when in the end,
you had to give it all up.
I gave it up. Of course, that is what we call the mashal, okay? That is the proverb. The question is, what is the nimshal? In other words, what is the point of it? So, of course, Rabbi Meir says the point is very simply, we come into the world, right? And we come in with nothing, and then we want to grab everything. But what happens? We discover that when we leave this world, we can't take it with us.
Nothing like that.
Yeah. So, right, when he passed away, there was no one left who could create as many proverbs as Rabbi Meir. Next, Mishameis ben Azai. When Ben Azai passed away, of course his real name was Shimon ben Azai. So, Botlu Ashak Donim. No longer did you have people who devoted the study of Torah day and night, day and night, day and night, the way he did. This is what we call Shakdanut. He was a Shakdan. In other words, he spent his days and nights studying. With what we would call, another term would be Hasmoda. He was a Masmid. In other words, he kept on studying. You know, that's from the word Tamid, right? Always, always involved in studying. So there was no one like him for Shakdanut. Okay? Mishameis ben Zalman, and when Ben Zalman passed away, Boto Adar Shonim. Then we no longer had people who were able to make literally so many drashim, which means, you know, upon the Torah to be able to derive statements and so on and so forth. Well, we had a reference to that in the Mishnah Brachas, which of course also we include in the Seder for you know, for Pesach, where it's written over there, right, that I could not find, right, Lama, as long as I lived, I said I couldn't find justification for the recital of Kriya Shema at night. Actually, he wasn't talking so much about Kriya Shema, because with the Shema and the Ahavta and the Hoyam Shema over there, it says specifically, right, that Bishach B'chov Kamecha. So that wasn't the point. The point is about whether to recite the third paragraph of the Shema, because what is the third paragraph of the Shema deal with? Actually, there are two subjects, right? The first one is tzitzis, and with tzitzis, we know that tzitzis are for a day garment. But they're not required at night. Okay? So, that being the case, then why say the third paragraph of... So, Ben Zoma came along and he found a reason for it, because it's written, Laman Tizkor, Esyom Tzeischa Me'ev Tzayim, Kol Yimei Hayecha. Right? You are to remember the day that you left Egypt, all the days of your life. So, if it is Yimei Hayecha, right?
All the days, that means all the nights too.
Then in that particular case, okay, so that means during the day. But Kol Yimei Chayecha, right, this is already Balelos, right? And then the Chachamim came along, they made another drash, right? They say Yimei Chayecha in Mahazeh, not only in this world will we recite that, but also Yimei Chayecha in Mahaba, in the world to come.
Sam's father keeps the tzitzis on the night of this year.
Yeah, I'm sure that there are some who did, right?
Yeah,
I'm sure that there are.
Okay.
But, you know, it's not required. I mean, we certainly don't hold that it's required, okay? Besides, I mean, I don't know where you're going to be able to attach tzitzis to pajamas.
No, they're
I understand.
Yeah, I'm confident.
Right.
He has to wear it over the pajamas.
Right,
he can't
right.
Wear it under the pajamas.
Correct. Okay. yeah. Okay.
Pajamas,
right. So, Mishameis Rabbi Akiva. Yeah, when Rabbi Akiva passed away, Botil Kvod HaTorah, then the great glory of the Torah passed together with him. Now, of course, we've had great Torah scholars since Rabbi Akiva as well. But nevertheless, what was one of the outstanding qualities of Rabbi Akiva? The answer is that he was able to find justification for various halachas and things like that, and various drushas, even from such things as, for example, the essen in the yakin. You know, the word es in Hebrew, not Yiddish, okay?
Yeah.
Right. There's no translation for the word es, right? No translation. It's a sign of the direct object. But there is no English equivalent for it, okay?
It precedes the direct object.
Yeah, right. Yeah, right. Right. If you have a definite direct object of a verb, then in that particular case, S is going to precede it, okay? But is there a translation for it? No. But nevertheless, Rabbi Akiva came along and he was able to find a drash. Why does it say S? And so it says it's in order to include this and this and this and this. You see, it's one of the ways of interpreting Torah, okay? Or he would even interpret the Taggin. What a Taggin? Taggin are little crowns. If you would take a look at a script of the Torah, you would find that there are seven letters in the Hebrew alphabet that have little strokes on the top. A Shin, an Ayin, a Tes, a Nun, a Zion, a Gimel, and a Tzadi. Those are the seven. No, they're not Tes. No.
I mean,
the mnemonic is shut in his guts. Okay. Yeah. If you take a look, the Shin, they have on the left side over there, they have like three little strokes.
Yeah,
over
it.
The same thing over the
Torah,
Ayin,
yeah.
Over the Tes, right. Okay, over the Nun, over a Zion. And
like
over a Gimel and over a Tzadi.
It's like the letter is written with a flame, and on top of the flame are the...
Right. There's like little crowns, right. That's what they call Taggin, which is another word which means crown, okay? So, he was able to find an interpretation why this particular word has it, and so on and so forth. So this is what they mean when they say that, Botel Kibot Torah, that, in other words, the great glory that he was able to find all these different things in the Torah, there was no one like him again. Mishameis Rabbi Chanina ben Doso, Botlan Shemase. The Gemara in Tainus, we had several dapim devoted to various miracles that were performed by Chanina ben Doso, who was a very, very poor person, very poor. He suffered all his life from poverty. But he was very pious, and everything he did was for the sake of Am Yisrael, Klal Yisrael, okay? And one of the most beautiful stories that we have in the Gemara in Tainus is that his wife once said to him, Chanina, how long are we going to suffer poverty? Pray to Rebbeinu Shalom that she'd give us a break, give us a little parnasa, right? So all of a sudden, a golden leg of a table fell down from heaven, and Chanina and his wife, they said, what is this? What is this golden leg? So they said, this is the golden leg of the table that is preserved in Gan Eden for you. So when they heard that, they said, we'd rather suffer in this world the poverty and not make use of it, not lose the reward that we'll have in Olam Haba. And so Chanina ben Doso threw it, and the hand gripped it, and brought it back again from the heaven. But Gemara says, concerning Chanina ben Doso, he says, the whole world exists because of the merit of Chanina ben Doso. And my son, my child Chanina, is content to live with just a kav charuvim, and a kav is a certain measure, let's say like a bushel or something of carob fruit from one Shabbos to the next Shabbos. That's all that he had to eat. Couldn't afford anything else. And yet, because of his merit, the world was in existence. And so, the kind of piety, what he did for Am Yisrael, there wasn't a person like him. Okay. Mishameis Rabbi Yossi Katanta, when Rabbi Yossi, literally the small one or the humble one, passed away, Potsku Chasidim, then pious people ceased. It doesn't mean that there weren't any more pious people. It means, again, no one like him in the great piety that he exhibited. Valonga Nikrosh Bo Katanta, and why was he called that Katanta? Sashaya Katanta Shal Chasidim. Because he was only the smallest of the chassidim. In other words, people before him had even greater chassidus. And imagine if he was what he is. What he is. It's like, Yochim and Zakkai, there's a Gemara that says that among all the Talmidim of Hillel, he was the least of them, and yet this was a man who was so godol b'Torah. He was great in Torah and the matzah and everything else. So obviously, it means that those, the others were even greater. But this is the one, who rose to prominence because of what he did. You see. So again, we see that this is a continuation of the idea of how the generations weakened as we went down as time went on. Right. Mishabes Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, when he passed away, Botel Ziv HaChochma, then the glory or the radiance of wisdom passed away, because he was so full of deeds that he did on behalf of the people of Israel. Not only was he a great scholar, but actually it was his leadership that enabled the Jewish people after the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdosh to continue.
Did all these people live in, they all died at the same time?
No, they lived at different generations. Okay. Right, right.
Even the
it's not necessarily over
time.
Here in the chronological either.
No.
It's not. But the point is that each one exhibited a certain quality that was outstanding. And you did not have others who really were able to attain the same standard of performance or quality, whatever you want to say, as they did. Okay? Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, again, he was the one who came to Vespasian, right? And he predicted to Vespasian that he would be named the Emperor of Rome, and Vespasian was ready to have him executed because he said, you know, you're making fun of me and so on. But at that particular moment, along came a messenger from Rome to say that the Roman Senate had made Vespasian the new emperor. And so that's when Vespasian went back to Rome, and he appointed his son Titus to carry on the battle and complete it against the Jewish people. And he asked Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, ask something and I'll give it to you. So he asked, but the favor that he asked was something the Romans had never anticipated. They thought that he would ask, you know, estates and gold and silver and so on, you know. He didn't. Said only two things, he says. Says, well, three things, actually. The first thing he says, Tain the Yavda. Permit me to settle in the little village of Yavda, and there I'll be able to establish a school. And the other thing that he asked is to keep alive the dynasty of Rabban Gamliel, who happened to be a descendant, of course, of Hillel. And the third one is to get a doctor, because the great starvation that had taken place, and when he wanted a doctor who would be able to help those who were starving to death. Okay, so you know, Vespasian granted him these wishes, but what Vespasian didn't realize is that in the school in Yavda that became actually the place where Yiddishkeit was saved for the people of Israel, because there he was able not only to teach Torah and to ordain great leaders who would follow his example, but also he was able to make all kinds of decrees to keep alive things that had passed away with the Beis HaMikdash, as for example the blowing of the shofar, which originally was meant only for the Beis HaMikdash, and he said that it could be done. Okay? Or you know, the sukkahs and, you know, things, and all these various things that he decreed in order to enable the Jewish life. People should not give up on Yiddishkeit, but should continue to live it, even as I said before about his disciple Rabbi Yehoshua and Hananya, who also, you know, preached similarly to what Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai had stressed.
There's an interesting, slightly comparison. After about 1936-1938, when the small village of the Germany, there was not enough dominion, they published a special sugar for those places where there was no minion that they could have regular services in the government.
Yeah.
The show continued.
Okay, Mishabez Rabbi Gamliel Hadzokain, when Rabbi Gamliel the elder passed away, Botil Kivot Torah, well, we already said the same thing about Rabbi Akiva, but they add Umesa Taro of Rishos. But in addition, also laws of purity and separation and so on and so forth, these also passed away together with Rabbi Gamliel Hadzokain. We learned before also that the Rabbi Gamliel, remember, they made a decree that you know, from this time on, if you buy things, don't rely upon the seller, you know, to take the Trumas and Mashmas, instead,
yeah,
you do it yourself. Right. Mishameis Rabbi Yeshmuel ben Pavi. When Rabbi Yeshmuel ben Pavi passed away, Botla Ziv Hakuna, then the radiance of the Kahuna, you know, being a Kohen, passed away with him. In other words, he was one of the outstanding Kohanim. Mishameis Rabbi, when Rabbi Yehuda Anosi passed away, Botel Anova V'Yiras Chek, then humility and fear of sin also passed away with him. These two were his outstanding qualities. Well, I'll do a little bit further, and then we'll stop when we turn over the page, okay, and save it for our seal, okay?
Yeah.
All right. Rabbi Pinchas ben Yoyer Omer, he says as follows, V'shechora beis hamikdosh, when the temple was destroyed, boshu chaverim uvenei chorin, the chofu roshom, and the daldulu anshe masa, the govru balei zeroa, and balei loshom. Okay. All kinds of calamities happened. First of all, the chaverim, in other words, those who were Torah scholars, they were put to shame. And also b'nei chorin, the well-born people, people who were literally like the aristocracy, but of course we're talking about the learning aristocracy of the people of Israel. They passed away, the chofu roshem, and their faces, their heads were covered. In other words, they're like a sign of shame. V'nildaldolon shemase, and again, people who were able to carry on deeds on behalf of the people, they became poorer. But on the other hand, who became the upper echelons? Govru balei zroa, the people who had a mighty hand, meaning, in other words, the rough, the gangsters and so on, these were the ones who became bachers, right? Uvalei loshon, and those who lived on the basis of their tongue, I don't have to tell you whether it's loshon hara or being able to seduce the masses, these were the people who became the leaders. V'yein doresh v'yein mevakesh v'yein yeshoel. And the result is that there's nobody who seeks out Torah or who can interpret Torah the way it should be. V'yein mevakesh, nor the people even look for it, right? V'yein yeshoel, nobody asks shilas anymore and things like that. It's like American Judaism, you know. V'yein doresh v'yein mevakesh v'yein yeshoel, right? So almi lanu lehishoein, so who can we lean upon? Who can we depend upon? The answer is Alavinu Shema Shemayim, on our Father in Heaven. It's the only hope that we have when we live in an age where the lawless and the illegitimate, they are the ones, you know, who take over the reins of leadership, and Torah leadership itself goes into the hands of people who are not educated and, you know, doing everything in order to destroy authentic Judaism. This is the problem. But we still have our Father in Heaven upon whom we can call. Okay? Rabbi Eliezer HaGadol Omer, he says, Miyom Shechorah Beis HaMikdosh, from the time that the Beis HaMikdosh has been destroyed, Shoru Chakimaya Lemeh Vekisafraya. So, the Chachamim became like Malamdim. In other words, lower in quality. I'm not saying that a Malamdim doesn't do an important job. He does, obviously, right? But you cannot compare the knowledge of a Malamdim with that of a Chacham, okay? Talmud Chacham. The Safraya, and on the other hand, you know, those who were formerly, let's say, teachers, right? They became like Chazanaya. The word Chazan in the Mishnah refers not to a cantor, but it refers rather to like what we would call a Shabbos, a person who attended the various needs of a shul, took care of the lighting, the heat, and so on, made sure that the siddurim, the chumashim were there, so this was the chazan, okay.
Some places call it something.
Yeah. The chazanaya, and those who formerly were like that, they descended to what? To the Amar the Ara. They became like Amaratzim. Right? The Amar the Ara and the people of the land, Azlov and Nudaldum. And they in turn became poorer and poorer and poorer. Of course, we're talking about spiritually poorer, right? The Ein Shoel, the Ein Mevakesh. And again, nobody asks any shilas, nobody seeks. to the knowledge of Torah and so on. So al mi yesh yehishoen, so who can we rely upon? Al avinu shebashamay, okay, upon our Father in heaven. All right, so I think I'm going to stop at this point. My throat is already getting a little bit worn out, and we'll finish this in Yetzah Hashem the next time that we meet. All right. At the beginning of our shiur tonight, before most of you came, we were talking about the fact that, first of all, the next two Wednesday nights are taken up. Following Wednesday night, next week is taken up with Rudy's lecture. The week after that is the cantorial concert. And then the Wednesday after that is the night prior to Erev Shavuot. Some people indicated they'd be away. So I think that we'll skip those weeks. And then we will meet the first Wednesday night after Shavuot, which is, I think, the 26th. I'll tell you in a second again. And we'll make the Siyum at that time. Okay? Okay. Parsha Sota deals with the case of the Torah mention of a woman who is suspected of adultery by her husband. Now, what gave him grounds for this particular suspicion? The fact that he notices that she seems to be too friendly with a certain individual. And so he gives her a warning, but the warning has to be before a Beis Din. The fact that she's not to be seen in private together with that particular person. And then what happens if nevertheless she disobeys the husband's injunction and she does, go into a private session with the man whom he has warned her against, and in that particular case, even though he doesn't know for sure that adultery has taken place, but nevertheless, he has the right now to come to a Beis Din and to say that he suspects his wife of having committed adultery. She naturally will be protesting her innocence, okay? So, as a result, the Torah indicates that there is a procedure that has to be followed. And that procedure is that the local Beis Din, the local Sanhedrin, actually, has to appoint Talmidei Chachamim as escorts, take her to Yerushalayim together with the husband, and there they're going to go through an ordeal in which they have to be tested by a Kohen who is in charge. Mm-hmm. He has to give her what we call the Mayim HaMa'orim, the waters of curse or bitterness, depending upon how you want to interpret it, and this is going to test whether she is truly innocent or not. If she's guilty, punishment physically will befall her. It doesn't mean that she's going to be executed or anything like that, because after all, there weren't witnesses, you see. But nevertheless, she will suffer consequences.